And just for my own, oh, just as the meeting's being recorded, just
I forgot.
my own information, I'm well aware of RUPCO providing funding and, going out for bid for rehabilitation activities. How does Citizens Power fit into this? Is the entire
Sure.
portion of this funding going just to contract with them? Does it go in for additional energy upgrades? If I could just get that.
Sure. And thank you for that question, Legislator Petit. The Citizens for Local Power has a really great working relationship with contractors that do these deep energy retrofits, and also with respect to the internship program. So the money here would be devoted to Citizens for Local Power on the administration side and on their work with they currently have a grant from NOVO that's paying their interns. So a bulk of the money would go to essentially for RUPCO for direct assistance to the homeowner. And Citizens for Local Power would have a small piece of this with respect to make sure that they have the administrative capability to move this forward.
Very good, thank you. Okay, so we will take no action on this resolution unless you're comfortable enough after the explanation.
I'm not aware of the chair's concerns. This looks very good to me. I mean, if there is some time sensitivity in terms of getting the program started this year, I'd rather have it this year than next year. Or
yeah, I would too.
And have it done before winter, so it might be more helpful. So is there a way that we can be respectful of the chair's concerns and still move this forward?
Legislator Fabiano?
Yeah, I feel the same way as Legislator Nolan. I think we should move this forward tonight.
I tend to agree after the explanation. Yeah,
right.
Especially if someone else is taking care of the administrative part of it, and more money will go into the upgrades. Right. Deputy Kelly.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, anybody on the call can correct me if I'm wrong, but even if this committee passes it tonight, it will still go to other committees down the chain. So
right.
If the chair wanted to have her voice kind of heard on this, I think there'll be other opportunities even before the floor.
All right. So hearing the will of the committee, yes, Legislator Fabiano.
I would like to move it for passage.
Okay. Did we?
We will call the vote.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No abstentions. Okay. Thank you very much. So Deputy Ryder, we have Legislator Erner present now, so we are going to move back to resolution number 298. Is it 298? Yep, that's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Establishing a policy to eliminate mandatory fares for Ulster County area transit. Do I hear a motion to open it for discussion?
Move it.
Legislator Nolan, second.
I'll second it.
Okay, Legislator Fabiano. Legislator Erner, did you want to ask the first question, or do you want to open it up to one of our deputies to discuss it?
Thank you, Chair Petit. Well, Deputy Kelly and I had most recently talked as far as between me and the executive on this. So, Deputy Kelly, through the chair, would you like to share where you're at?
Sure. All right. So we have been researching, and I'm not going to get too far down in the weeds, but it is important to understand that there's quite the thicket of weeds when you're dealing with FTA and state operating aid and making sure that we ensure the integrity of it. So our approach is to understand the existing ridership and income it provides. And then what we're doing is trying to find a way where instead of charging the user the fee, which is our fare, to make sure that we charge that same amount back to the government, meaning us, in order to make when we report up to the state and the FTA, in order to make sure that we get it's essentially, and it's about, we get $3 for every dollar that we spend. If we have 300,000 or 350,000 in fares, the state is going to give us about $1 million in operating aid assistance. So that's what we need to make sure is made whole. So I've got the budget team right now just finalizing that piece. The other piece is really getting down to the implementation part of this. We have fares posted everywhere. We have a fare schedule. We have to make sure that we're ready for the messaging of this. Automatic people counters are going to be installed on the buses at some point. I'm sure in the beginning we'll have to do manual counts, but to have the APCs installed as part of even good internal controls when it comes to counting fares against people riding is a good idea. But it will be more important since we're not going to be chart collecting that dollar or that fare. The other piece, and this is more of a budgetary approach and just having the understanding that what we're creating is a it's an optional program. It's a benefit to that would be offered to anyone riding the transit system. So we are just trying to figure out, and this is not at all to step on the idea that came from Legislator Erner, but we're trying to understand whether we're more comfortable with using existing an extra fund balance versus ARP funds for a short duration. We've never done this. We don't know. We've had a declining ridership over the last few years. What is the impact of a free transit system on a county? We don't know the answer to that because we haven't done it yet. So the risk becomes over time is that we're successful, very, very successful. It's going to be that much more expensive. We're also trying to invest in our transit system. We're trying to green the fleet. We're trying to replace aging infrastructure. We have to build a new bus garage. All of that has to stay intact, whether we collect the fares or not. So we're much closer, and my goal is August, where we'll have this ironed out. We've gotten a lot of this hard stuff out, but I still, you know, I know Dennis and the Ulster County Transportation Council will still want to weigh in on certain aspects of this, but I do feel much more comfortable today, and I think we're getting to be in a very good place. It's not that expensive. We're talking $300,000 to $350,000 a year. Mm. So on a whole, for a budget of $352, $53 million to provide free transit countywide, it's not so significant that it's really, you know, that's not what's causing pause. It's making sure that we do this in the right way. And I do think that a pilot for 18 months, 2 years, whatever seems to be everybody's purview, I think that would be prudent. And then it's really a study. It's a study of an impact of free transit on a county like ours. And I don't know the outcome. So, but we're in a good place.
Legislator Nolan.
Thank you for that, Deputy Executive Kelly. It's very helpful. I have one question and one suggestion. The question is, will riders be allowed to pay? You know, could we keep the existing fare structure in as an optional fare structure? We have a lot of businesses throughout the county that actually do operate on a pay-forward basis where people pay for things that they are giving to their neighbors. So if it's possible and it doesn't complicate the logistics unduly, then I think there might be a benefit in that. So that's my question. Is it possible? And I put a recommendation in on that. The other recommendation is I think that this does make sense to me for ARPA funding because I think that Ulster County Area Transit was hit so hard with the pandemic that there's a kind of natural connection that I think will help with the messaging to the public that as a result of, you know, the impacts on the system from the pandemic, we're seeking this funding and making this change. So that would be my suggestion, depending upon what you and Director Johnson and others work out in terms of what you think the ridership will want. And Legislator Ehr may have some feedback from the members of the community he's been working with about both of those issues. In the end, I think people will be happy if it's funded and won't care where the funding comes from, but there may be people who have ideas about the messaging.
Sure. May I, Chair?
Yes. Thank
sure.
you.
So that is so that idea was brought up by Legislator Ehrner and several others about the pay forward model. Yeah, without getting too much into the operations at the bus level, I think that would be fine. And we have to work that part out. In Kansas City, it's about an eight, they've done the same thing and they have about an $8.5 million hole that they fill on the fare side. $4 million is coming from private foundations and $4.5 million is coming from the city. So they're doing a mix of both of those. Obviously their ridership is significantly higher. But it makes a lot of sense, and that is what could lead to what I think would be a more kind of recession and hard times resilient type of system if we were to continue to collect something. And in terms of part of our approach is, and I think Lauren can speak to this well as a newer to our system, is if you look at our fare schedule today, it's kind of complicated and a bit all over. And that these things do happen over time. So from a budget standpoint, we're looking to simplify it in terms of what we charge back to ourselves. So I think state operating, Dennis, you can also jump in and correct me, but they require a minimum and a discount fare, and I think it's 30 cents and 15 cents. That doesn't make sense for us because it's not going to roll up nicely to the 300 or 350,000 that we need, but we are trying to settle on maybe two fares here that we can charge back to ourselves just for terms of simplicity. I think the pay it forward model could help. I think there could be interest from, I talked with the majority leader, John Heppner, and he talked about if municipalities want to expand service, that looking to replicate similar contracts like we do with New Paltz and the student union where they're paying for it, essentially, in a lot of respects. So there's interesting ways that we can look at that part of it, but I think that'll be a little further down the road.
Okay, Legislator Nolan, did you have another question? Okay, no.
Legislator Fabiano.
Legislator Fabiano?
Yes, I got a laugh. I can't believe that I'm going to agree with Legislator Nolan on two resolutions in a row. but I do agree with her. If a party gets on the bus and they want to pay, I mean, you know, somebody that's doing okay in life and don't want to, you know, take advantage, if they want to pay, they should be able to pay to help towards the cost. I mean, if I had to get on one of those buses and the option was there not to pay, I think for the 50 cents or dollar that it would cost me, I would definitely be willing to pay. So I feel that should be in there, that can take place.
And Director Johnson, did you want to add anything to the conversation since your name was brought up?
everything is in a lot of those prior discussions that we've had as a group collectively. I only thing I would add is looking for other opportunities such as the private sector with businesses to participate in that share of the funds. Specifically, if we match our ride times or delivery times to their shift schedules at their operation, might be a kickback to actually promote more ridership that is going to be used and meaningful, especially when we look at days of if those corporations or organizations promote, you know, public transit as a ride for that day or whatever to increase our ridership and the use of it. So.
Yeah, I agree. Certainly with the price of, well, I know that fuel's gone down a little bit, but it's still high enough that, you know, I don't know about everybody else, but I'd love to be able to take the bus more often. You know, I had said before when we went down to Ellenville, that would have been a good quarter of a tank of gas just to go to that meeting. So, so with that, this resolution, would you like to take no action on it since it doesn't contain all of the components of this discussion, and there'll be another resolution presented. Legislator Ehrner, what would you like to do at this point?
Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
Okay. All right, so we'll take no action on this resolution. The next one is, thank you, Resolution 339, approving the execution of a contract for $1,364,900 entered into by the county with Gorick Construction Company. Hear, hear, motion. Thank you, Legislator Nolan. Second. Where did Herb go? Oh, there. Want to second it? Good. Legislator Litz will second it. Okay. Open the floor up for discussion. Legislator Erner, you had questions?
Yeah, if anybody on the committee, though, has questions first.
No. And we have Deputy Ryder here who can answer questions as well, along with Director Masterson.
Okay, then. So let's see here. So I read as best I could through the plan here, and I spoke with the named project manager, Jake Blosser, from Buildings and Grounds. Jake had told me he hadn't heard that he was named on this yet, so I'd just like to verify that we feel that he'll be prepared to play that role of managing, having just learned about that he's supposed to do that.
Yeah, I mean, a project manager wouldn't get assigned to a project until there's actually a project, which hasn't happened yet on this. So I think it would be early to say that he's going to definitely be the project manager. We have multiple project managers through in the county, and so that determination would be later.
Okay, so you're saying it's more of a formality. You just have to name somebody, and it could change, and that's okay.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see here. I read through the boring study and the asbestos study. I think that the second of those had come out in a previous resolution, but I'm certainly not an expert on these things. I know some concerns had been raised previously about the roof, and the study says that the roof is assumed all to be asbestos. Do we feel that we're prepared, and or that the bidder, the contractor, is prepared to deal with that, however they have to deal with that?
Yes, they are aware that they have to demolish the building as assuming that there's asbestos. I'm sure there will be some asbestos testing to do samples. I mean, there's already been some done that I believe were included in the bid documents. But they will have to take the roof down, assuming it's asbestos. Dennis, do you have anything to add?
Only the fact that the county is going to be required to essentially hire a separate asbestos consultant to essentially make sure that we have third-party air quality testing with respect to the demolition as it relates to asbestos removal, and that's required under law.
So that'll be done after the contractor goes in and there's a deeper dive into what's there, and then
We'll hire that individual prior to that.
Okay.
We have people on contract that do that. We would just assign that vendor to do that testing.
And where does the asbestos go after? I mean, the clean solid waste is, the Resource Recovery Agency takes possession under flow control. But does this get shipped out to a landfill in Buffalo area? Or
there are certain areas that are allowed to take in asbestos waste, and so it has to go to it has to get certified that it was disposed of in a licensed certified manner.
Awesome. Okay, so there's manifests. Okay. Legislator Erner.
Thank you. Have we got any better sense at this point about what, if any, blasting might be needed to do the demolition?
I don't think. I think Yeah, go ahead, Dennis. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Go ahead, Mark. The short answer is that there will be no blasting with respect to the demolition.
If there was any blasting, it would be done during the site work to prep the site being ready, but we have not determined that that's going to be necessary.
Good news.
All right, anything else? Okay, hearing no other questions, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? No abstentions. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Clerk Tom Shaw, are we at resolution number 347 now, since we're hopping around? Okay. All right, resolution number 347, amending capital project number 541, SUNY Ulster, facilities equipment, amending the 2022 capital fund budget. Motion to open for discussion?
So moved. Yeah.
Legislator Nolan? Okay. Take your pick. Okay. Do we have any questions on this resolution? Improvement of facilities? No? No comments? Okay. So hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? No abstentions. Resolution number 352, authorizing the Department of the Environment to submit an application to the New York State Water Quality Improvement Project Grant Program for Water Quality Projects. Motion to open. Kathy Nolan. Second, Herb Blitz. I think my only, did I have a question on this? No, I think I was wondering where or what it exactly was, but it looks like it's specifically for Woodstock. It was called Woodstock something for the salt shed. Is that correct?
Woodstock number 2 crossing. That's part of it, I think.
Yeah. Director Masterson?
Yeah, there are two parts to that she's submitting on, or that the environment is submitting on. One is for what we call Woodstock number 2 culvert, and the other part is to try to get some funding back for what we're just spending on the salt shed fabric replacement.
Oh, so it's two part. Oh, awesome. Okay. Okay. Because I did remember we did the salt shed already, so I thought maybe we had multiples in the county. All right. Okay. So that answers my question. Anything else? Okay, hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No abstentions. Resolution number 357, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into a lease agreement with Industry Village 1151. Motion to open for discussion. Legislator Litz, second. Legislator Nolan. Any discussion?
I think Legislator Fabiano has his hand up, but I also...
No, I was going to move
okay.
Discussion. I'm sorry.
Yes. So what will take place in this building?
This is on behalf of the sheriff. He requested this space.
Okay.
So do we know if this is then additional to space that we already have, or is it going to replace something?
Deputy Kelly?
I believe this the chair of the legislature made calls on behalf of this resolution to you, the chair, and others on the committee.
Yeah, she told me she spoke with everyone. I see two yeses.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I forgot. It was long enough ago.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Thank you.
All good. Yeah.
Okay. So hearing no other discussion, I'll move the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. 350, we just did 357, yeah. I'm scrolling.
383.
Establishing capital project number 639, Hall of Records building roof restoration, amending the 2022 capital fund budget. Do I hear a motion to open for discussion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Nolan, second. Legislator Fabiano. I see that it is eligible for a solar up on the roof, which is awesome. Robert Parody, did you have a comment?
Other than we were required to do a feasibility study with the Department of the Environment, we did one and it came back that it is economically feasible, and it also is structurally feasible. So that's a separate part, a separate project than this project. But we're excited about that.
I thought it was part of this. That's why I was so excited. Legislator Nolan.
Yeah. I'd just like to compliment especially Legislator Green, who has worked tirelessly to make sure that we always ask this question. And it's so nice to have the question asked and answered in a way that allows us to save some money going forward and continue to move in a green direction. So I appreciate people following through on this. I don't know for sure if this is the one, but there's one of these resolutions that has, it must be another one. So I'll come back to that. I want to know what soil nails are, but I think it's a later resolution. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's an interesting. All right, Legislator Litz.
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping. My question was, is the cost of the project including the solar? And I just found out that's no. Is there somehow we can coordinate the projects, because we're going to put a brand new roof on this building, and then we're going to put out a project to cut holes in it to install solar? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Legislator Litz, that's not necessarily how we're going to go about it. I believe it's easier to separate these out. We identify that it is feasible to do so, but the design for the solar may or may not be penetrating. I believe in this case, it might be a ballasted system.
I mean, that's fine if in fact that's the way it's going to go. Can we find that out before the roof contractor is there or leaves? Because if there is penetrations, maybe those can be made. Then the roof company does their work, so everything's sealed up nice and tight, and then the solar comes and installs. I mean, if there's no penetration, I don't see the issue. But if there is penetration, it would be nice to have that work done before you button up and seal the roof rather than cut holes in a new roof.
Mm, and would avoid the contract or the
warranty.
Warranty on it, yeah.
On some of these, some of the solar installations may be eligible for grants that may not have been applied for yet. So I wonder if there's some funding issues that are cross-cutting. I agree with Legislator Litt's point from the engineering point of view, but does the roof need to be addressed right away? And is there going to be a delay to get the funding for the solar, or could it be brought together reasonably? And a limit, you know, it just gives us more options in terms of whether to penetrate the roof or not based on what we're going to need to do for the solar.
Rob, you have any comment on that?
No, other than we did go back and forth with the consultant and the company, and, it's not going to be part of it. And there's a 15-year warranty with the roof. The new roof, and we're going to start right with the second part of the phase for the solar aspect of it right away.
So the contractor is aware that there will be solar put on this new roof, and they're still carrying forward with the warranty?
We can double check with that, but just, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see that in writing, that he will guarantee the roof system for 15 years, whether we penetrate it or not.
Okay.
Would that be an amendment in the next resolution 385? Or
I was going to ask, maybe we don't need to do that by resolution, if we could just request that
it's in the contract.
That it's in the contract.
would that contract amendment be ready for Ways and Means at their next meeting?
Which is, that's tomorrow night.
Oh, it's quick. They do have one next week as well. Okay. So what do you think, Legislator Litz, are you, I'm sorry, Legislator Fabiano?
Well, my question to Rob would be, how time sensitive is this? Would a postponement for a month do a lot of damage, or?
Well, you know, we have to get moving with the project because, you know, there's a window, a construction window that's set to expire after we go through the contracts and contract process. Yeah. So it's July, say we, you know, the contracts are approved in August, and then it's into September, and then it gets down to a tighter time frame for the construction because it starts getting colder in October. And this should take about 3 months, I believe, to complete. And the Hall of Records is a vital building there where they house a lot of documents and important documents. So we want to hurry up and get this done and over with as soon as we can. So there is a sense of urgency to getting it done.
Legislator Litz.
Yeah, can we pose a question to the engineering firm that did the study on the solar and ask them that, is there a non-penetrable system that would work there? And is that going to increase the cost above and beyond another system that, you know, you could install?
Yes, we can do that.
So, Legislator Litz, did you want us to take action on this? I mean, if we had to, we could always have a special meeting prior to legislative session.
Well, I mean, this resolution is just establishing a capital project to right. do the roof. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, we need to do that. The next resolution is the one that approves a contract for $510,600. And then if we're changing the contract or changing the guarantee or some verbiage to make them guarantee whether we penetrate or not, I mean, that price tag that they gave us or they bid on might change.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I would be happy to go ahead and move on this and the next one tonight. With knowing that this will go to Ways and Means, we're not asking for changes. We're asking for clarifications and guarantees. And I think that we may not have those by tomorrow night, but by next week, I would think that we should get clarification. And if it's unsatisfactory, then it just wouldn't pass out of Ways and Means. So this would allow it to move forward if that all is clarified in the way we expect.
Okay. And I can let Legislator Gavaris know for his next meeting that this came up in the conversation. Okay, so let's call the vote on this one because, as Legislator Litz pointed out, the contract for the roofer is $385. So we will be, I'm calling the vote for the Hall of Records on $383. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so moved. So the next resolution is 385, approving the execution of a contract for $510,600 entered into by the county with Titan Roofing, Inc. Motion to open it. Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Fabiano. Okay, any additional discussion on this one other than adding to the contract? The conditions for the warranty. Legislator Litz.
I mean, I don't have a problem with it as long as Titan Roofing is aware of guarantees that if we do whatever work we do afterwards, they're still going to make good on their 15-year warranty. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. Very good. Any other discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so moved. Next resolution is 386, approving the execution of a contract for $492,196 entered into by the county with AECOM, ICOM?
AECOM.
AECOM. Thank you.
One of the largest engineering firms in the country.
Woohoo. Okay. So I imagine you're opening this up for discussion. You made the motion?
Sure.
Second? Legislator Nolan. Okay. Now this is 97% funded by federal government, so this has got to be good. And it's a replacement of Turnwood Bridge.
Yep.
Where is Turnwood Bridge?
In the middle of nowhere. You cannot get there without driving through either Delaware County or Sullivan County.
Really?
Unless you walk up over the mountain, and it's a long walk.
It's out in my district. I've got to go visit it. Thank you. Gotta
find that. Where exactly? Isn't there usually? There's no address or anything. It's so rural. There's no address. Okay. All right. Any other discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any abstentions? Any noes? Okay. That one has been moved. I lost my spot. Okay. Resolution number 387, establishing capital project number 640, DPW large culvert program, amending the 2022 capital fund budget. Motion to open for discussion.
No move.
Legislator Litt, second. Legislator Nolan and Fabiano. Okay. Any questions on this one? I think this one was specifically for the Shamgum. Was it a covert pipe? Yeah, that was for a covert. A long one?
In the Austin. I do have one comment, and I guess bringing in here is a good place. There is from New York State DOT quite a bit of material on creating wildlife passageways with culverts. And I think we discussed this when I was in the legislature previously. I'm not sure if we have anything standing that the Department of Public Works does when looking at some of these fairly large culverts in particular, but maybe all of them, to look at wildlife passages. They can prevent crashes of animals and humans in cars and humans in other vehicles, like bicycles. So they can be cost effective, even though there may be some incidental expense with them. So I just ask Director Parity to maybe look at what is currently done and what could be done to build in that kind of analysis.
Legislator Litz?
Yeah, typically all of those projects have to acquire permits, and that's part of the permit process.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Because state-level permits?
Excuse me?
State-level permits, Director Doyle.
DEC.
DEC permits?
A lot of them, yeah.
Culvert? No. Oh, for
streams. For streams. A culvert is used, well, I won't say exclusively for streams or waterways, because there are animal crossing culverts that are put under the road. But I would say in our location of the world, probably 99% of the culverts are for passage of water.
Mm-hmm. And do you think DEC looks at wildlife passages as part of their permitting process?
Typically, there are things put into the project required to put in large rocks so that fish can hide out of the sun and make their way through the culvert. Very rarely are culverts allowed to have a smooth bottom anymore, especially large ones. We have to put back native materials and boulders so that the fish feel comfortable going up and downstream. There's a lot of requirements.
I'm happy to hear that. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I did read in one of these resolutions that it was following up on a DEC migration study. SOPAS had done one as well. So, Director Doyle, did you have anything to add to that? No? Okay.
No, they're Article 15.
The only thing I'd say is there are Article 15 permits that are out there for water quality. There are general permits that depend that are dependent upon culvert size that you can follow without actually going to get an individual permit.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Clerk Tomshaw, that you could take a peek at or forward that to us? You know, as far as requirements or Director Masterson, just out of curiosity, what is required when you want to drop something in a creek? Because I mean, I've heard people joke you can't even throw a toothpick in there without asking for permission. So that's why when you see trees in riverbanks, you're not just going to move them. But who would be where would be the best place to get that information?
DEC regions have that information. I can get it to you.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, the general permit information.
Whoops, you went. There you go.
Yeah, sorry. The general permit information is out there and for the conditions. And they're basically, they require open bottom culverts. You can't have closed bottom culverts, those kinds of things. All the type of things that Legislator Litz were talking about.
Thank you. Okay, so is there any other discussion on this? Right, hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, that has passed. Next one, because I was moving things around again. Resolution number 389, amending the 2022-2027 capital improvement program, establishing capital project number 641, Route 28A embankment stabilization in the town of Hurley. Motion for discussion? Legislator Nolan. Second. Legislator Litz.
Yeah. Or vice versa.
Okay. Whoops. Oh, no, I just lost it.
It'll come back.
It won't.
I lost mine for a while. It came back, so I'm hoping.
I tell you. Okay.
While you're finding it, this is the one where I have my question about the soil nails. It was soil cracks on the roofing project. This is soil nails. It looks like Legislator and Engineer Litz can answer the question.
Okay. Typically, when you build a road adjacent to a stream, the stream erodes the bottom of the embankment. Or maybe you have a clay layer beneath the embankment and you start to get a shear failure. You get cracks in the road and there's a chunk of earth that wants to rotate out and drop. Soil nailing is a type of geotechnical fix for crossing. What you actually do is you drive a soil nail across that intersection that wants to slip, and in effect you're stitching it together. So it creates a shear, it creates a shear pin to a slip due to shear. It's a shear failure. So they shoot them in. Some of them are grouted, some of them aren't, some of them have anchors on the bottom of them, some of them don't. That's all of those features are engineered into each and every shear failure is engineered for the fix. It's not a cookie cutter type thing. But this is just a process that's been found to be very successful and relatively cheap. I mean, years ago, we used to just dig the whole embankment down and put stone in and then build it back up, which was millions and millions of dollars. So this was a innovative way to correct that issue, or at least I won't even say it totally corrects it. It slows the movement. So rather than have it crack and drop every year, it may crack and drop every 40 years.
And cost a lot less when you have to repair it. I'm delighted. This is like that we're stitching together our sagging slope. Sounds
engineers at work.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Thank you. All right. Do we have any other questions? Hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you, Legislator Litz. Okay, I got back on. I'm only on the third page. Okay, resolution number 391, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $101,060 entered into by the county, Complete Building Solutions. Legislator Litz, you move. Second, Legislator Nolan.
Second.
Any discussion on this? Legislator Litz.
This is merely an extension for the existing contract to clean county offices. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so roughly it costs $100,000 a year to clean all of our facilities. Okay. That's all I needed to know.
Okay. And they're obviously using green products, right, Rob?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Sponsor of that resolution. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? So moved. Next, resolution number 392. Approving the execution of a contract for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 entered into by the county with Gordian Group, Inc. Open for discussion? Motion? Legislator Nolan? Second? Legislator Fabiano? Thank you. Any questions on this? It's software.
This is software. I mean, it looks like there is a representative from the company or somebody else could just describe what the software accomplishes.
Thank you. So Sophia Yang, representative from Gordian.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you. So this is to put in place, help Ulster County put in place a procurement vehicle. It's just another method of procuring construction projects. So it gives you another ability to bring contractors on board.
Thank you. Yes, I see.
So this would be similar to like the contract reporter?
No, we would be working with the county to establish a unit price book, which will go out on the street for a separate stage for advertisement, which would be open to contractors, to the bidding community, and the contractors would essentially be bidding on that unit price book that we develop.
Legislator Litz?
So this would be similar to the OGS contract type procurement that the state of New York uses?
Yes. Yep. New York State OGS, Office of General Services, has its own job order contracting program, one of Gordian Solutions. We also work with New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and other state entities like DASNY.
So if we build our own unit bid price process, would we still be able to utilize the OGS bid list, or are we locked into a county system?
It's just another option. It doesn't replace any procurement tools that you already have at hand.
Okay, because usually the OGS bid procurement, it tends to be a lot more economical because they're bidding out 600,000 tons of blacktop, where the county might bid out 6,000 tons. So usually with the economy of scale, there's a savings.
Legislator Litz, this is not material. This is only, services.
Oh, okay. But we would still look at and compare the OGS list and pick the best, right?
Correct.
Okay, I'm good with it then.
So, but would this Would this be a way for us to get in, you know, whatever, every 2 to 5 years, to just go out for general bidding so we wouldn't have to go out selectively every time we need a product? I mean, is it that similar to the OGS type building or the, what is it, the NYPA, if that's still around? And would other counties be able to utilize this?
So we're going to be piggybacking off of an Orange County contract.
Okay. There we go.
Orange County has already awarded to Gordian for JOC, job worker contract. We are piggybacking off their award. And it's just what Sophia had said. It's another route of procurement, another method.
Good. Should be more efficient that way.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. Resolution number 393, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $13,970, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county with Dutch's Overhead Doors. Motion to open for discussion?
So moved.
Fabiano, second. Litz, thank you. Any questions on this one? Legislator Litz.
Yes. This is an additional amount to the existing contract. Is this for new doors, or did the price go up, or why do they need the $13,970?
There you go.
This is a contract extension.
Yeah.
So what was the original term of the contract? From
to July of 2022.
Okay. Oh, and so we're extending it another year. Gotcha.
It's another year extension.
Okay.
And it says include additional overhead doors in the maintenance agreement.
Right.
Where do we have overhead doors besides the DPW maintenance shop?
Sheriff Station.
Sheriff Station, okay. Okay. Any other questions?
Director Johnson has his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Director Johnson.
I was going to add, we have...
you do.
20 bay doors here, roughly. So.
And really big buses.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so moved. Next, resolution number 394, establishing capital project number 643, UCAT bus purchase 2022, amending the 2022 capital fund budget with UCAT. Motion to open for discussion. Legislator Noland, second.
Very happy to make that motion.
Legislator Litz. Okay. $20 million. Director Johnson, what you buying?
Well, this is some good news. We are buying more BEVs, battery electric buses, as well as 8 support vehicles that will be also all electric. So right now, currently, we are at roughly about 6%, 6, 7%. Of our fleet being in compliance with the Green New Deal. This will actually bring us up closer to just under 40% of all of our fleet at 100% electric. And mind you, this will allow us to be ahead of schedule as far as the 2025 benchmark of 40%. It will take us at least anywhere from 9 months to 18 months to procure and get these vehicles delivered to us. It is also going to be utilizing some lapsing funds from the FTA that if we don't use those funds by September, we will lose that funding. So it is killing two birds with one stone, so to say.
Thank you. Legislator Litz?
Are these the same make and model of the electric buses we already purchased?
We do have an option to go with those. We are working with the procurement office to possibly submit another bid out there, and pretty much dusting off our previous bid and putting that out there to see if we could get different price points. I will like to have a fleet that is consistent across the board. So when you deal with different manufacturers, you're changing the model. Right now, currently, our fleet is comprised of four vehicles, Cutaways and Gillick's transit buses, and then our BBs, our New Flyers, which is a brand new bus manufacturer that we have here. So,
I mean, it makes it easier to stock parts, and you know, if you use eight different companies, you've got eight different you know, needs for parts and stocking them.
Absolutely. It makes it a little bit more difficult to maneuver those things around. Yep.
So the eight support vehicles, are those EV cars that VIA will be using, or are these smaller sized buses?
So I can tell you that they will be a combination of the Mustang Mach-Es that will be used for admin support vehicles, where we have to go out and do our 19A compliance observations on the fleet. And then it will also be comprised of two Ford Electric Transit Cutaways that we will outfit to be our service vehicles. And then it will also incorporate three Ford Transit Electric vehicles that will be used as passenger vehicles for paratransit. In hopes of our ability to win a competitive grant with VIA, they will not be able to introduce paratransit electric vehicles right away. So this will be able to have those vehicles ready as a complement for that population.
And I guess it's my understanding that some of the larger buses, the charge isn't held as long as, you know, since this is such a large county, are we also, because there, I know there's a resolution after this about a bus grant, but are we looking at some charging stations, perhaps in the park ride, so that we can, you know, get more of these buses into the county, but have the infrastructure to keep them up and running?
Absolutely. I've been having several meetings with Nick Costa, our Director of Environment and Energy, and we actually have a meeting coming up this week with NYSERDA and NYPTA, I believe, regarding looking at our current site here. And our goal is to maximize this footprint here with charging solutions, inclusive of solar panels, so we could then collect energy and putting in additional backup generators to be able to support not only the building and a bit of loss of power, but also as a charging backup solution for the vehicles if we lose power. And we are also going to be looking at outfitting all of the future-ready projects that was already previously planned for the level two chargers that will also be open up to the public to be able to use and charge their vehicles here, as well as our new fleet of support vehicles. So the goal is, again, to maximize this footprint here, and we want to make sure that we are putting in all the charging solutions that we can, whether or not that's in our support garage or outside around our facility as far as level two. And then from there, we can then go back and work with Dennis and the Transportation Council Planning Board on what is the plan for a secondary site or on route charging solutions.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
Legislator Fabiano is ahead of me.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. I was just going to ask if we know the rough travel distance of the electric buses between full charges. What are the mileage up to on those?
Oh, that's a very, very subjective number. I could tell you the factors that play into it. We get more MPGE, which is for electric, during the spring and summer months than we do in the fall and winter months, because utilizing the heat system inside those vehicles, we have a higher degradation of voltage with that. And the big factor that's very subjective right now is driver habits and how those impact, the electric economy of the vehicle. Right now, I am working with Nick's group to actually bear down what is the cost of actually operating those vehicles, because we have to look at the cost of electricity as the cost of our fuel. And from there, we'd be able to see how efficient are we truly being with those vehicles or not being with those vehicles.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you. Is anyone aware of buses, electric buses that carry a double battery, or some way that, let's say that it discharges and you could switch over to the other battery without having to sit around and recharge?
So the battery sizes is all dependent upon the charging method that you're going to be employing in your operation. So if you have the overhead charger system, those take quick, fast charges, and you do those along the route, but then you have to deal with the infrastructure, which is very expensive, to put those along the route so to keep that bus moving. Versus the type that we have right now is the plug-in charge. Those give you a longer range in battery life. And I'll give you an example of the three units that we have now compared to the units, the next generation that's out there, we've already seen is roughly about a 70 kilowatt or so increase in battery capacity with this next generation. So as we see going through the years, the battery capacities will constantly increase, which will give us longer ranges than what we currently have right now with the first generation of these vehicles.
Legislator Litz.
Thank you. I was just going to ask, I mean, what's your difference in peak and non-peak charging?
So typically we have a bus leave out at 4:30, 4:45 in the morning, and it comes back to the depot and has roughly about 40-50% charge left in the vehicle. And we could charge it for an hour while the driver's on lunch, and we could get an additional 20-30 wattage increase to that, enough for that bus to go right back out and then complete the end of the run for the day. So we're going to be designing these routes to allow for 3 to 4 run cuts where we could bring those units in, do a quick charge, send it back out, do another 3 to 4 hours, bring it back in, charge it up, and then send it back out as well. So we're definitely trying and testing out all different types of configurations and sending these vehicles out on every route that we currently have just to see how it performs on those routes to collect that data.
If I can just follow up on my initial question, I really appreciate this. And I think that, it's likely that the more urban areas of the county will be best served by these buses. At least initially, we have a very, very big county. So long distances on batteries is difficult even in passenger cars. But I just really think that the county is moving in the right direction, and to have our public transit system not contributing to air pollution is really important. Of course, reflected in our green fleet policy, but to be ahead of the curve and really testing this new equipment and being a model for how it can work is really, I think, a very important priority for the county. So I appreciate your work on this so much, and the Department of Environment as well, Director Johnson and the whole group that's worked to make this all happen.
Yes, it's definitely a collective effort, and I'm just happy enough to be a part of the county while we're taking on this initiative.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, I think this is our last resolution, 396, supporting and authorizing a grant application to the Federal Transit Administration to accept and administer funding for bus replacements and support vehicles, and authorizing the Ulster County Executive to execute any required applications or agreements to accept funding. Everybody's hands went up. Okay. Legislator Litz, and then seconded by Legislator Nolan. So the previous resolution, those were already funded. This is for additional, Director Johnson?
So it's actually the other way around. So we need this to be approved here so we can secure that lapsing funds that I spoke about earlier to make that purchase, which was the prior resolution. So it's timing-wise, the reason why you guys are kind of getting bombarded with two at once here is because for those support vehicles, the window for ordering opens up in August. And so we need to be prepared to be able to be first in line to make that order, because those vehicles are going to take about 9 months to a year to get them produced. Secondly, also because of the transit vehicles, it's going to take anywhere from 12 to 16 months, 18 months to get produced as well. And so we don't want to go too far without having new vehicles coming into the fleet, replacing out our fossil fuels that we have. This is actually the original purchase was supposed to be made last year for this year, and that didn't get made or planned, because the proposal at that time was for diesel buses, which was not in compliance with the Green New Deal. Mm-hmm. And so this is making sure that we're in compliance with that Green New Deal and moving full steam ahead with that.
And will there be additional funding put in here for the infrastructure to, say, do the remote charging up in Shandaken or down in Marlboro? Or
that is something that we are definitely looking at. I believe we had a, prior to my coming on board here, we had a site study done for us to have a garage built across the way here, as well as looking for some on-route charging solutions. Unfortunately, we have to do a new site study and go through that whole process again because it has lapsed. And so FTA requires us to have something within 2 years as far as the site study when we're going to utilize that funding. But actually, it's actually perfect timing because, like I said earlier, we need to actually learn what we can do here at Danny Circle first and foremost, and maximize this site fully before we start putting additional charging solutions out in the community and everything. And so this will help us have a little bit more efficient plan of how we need to spend those dollars, because it is going to be costly when we put that infrastructure in place. And that way we'll be a little bit more prudent about the funds and everything.
Unless we can get solar canopies in at all the parking rides.
Yes. So one of the things that I'm partnering up with Nick Hosda on is, I believe, the DPW out in Ellenville. There's a little patch of land there that we're looking at putting in a canopy-style, possibly charging solution for, you know, microtransit as well as, you know, our UCAT buses. So.
And this will be to Director Doyle, since your title today is Ulster County Transportation Council. I have the proposed, but it's not a report, but for the 2023, 28 or 27 TIPS.
Yeah, it's a transportation improvement program.
Thank you.
The TIP, yeah.
Is this part of it as well?
There's funding in here for both transit as well as the highway system. So the short answer is yes. And we're looking at allocations of funding that we currently have for UCAT, which is somewhere in a neighborhood of about $4 million a year from all sources that we currently have, not including STOA funds. And that's what's programmed here. And we work with Director Johnson on their program of projects to make sure that the TIP and the FTA applications would go together. Otherwise, we run into needs for amendments, et cetera, et cetera. But I just want to caution the county that, you know, electrifying the fleet is not cheap. And you need to think about what you're spending versus essentially what you have in federal dollars. And you're looking at a substantial amount of capital needs in order to electrify this fleet by 2030, compared to the dollars available at the federal level. And you need to be aware of that.
Okay.
Is it to our advantage to be obtaining this funding now, where we have a 10% cost share and getting these purchases already in place?
These are allocated funds, Legislator Nolan. So these are allocated by formula. There are various numbers that are associated with them, whether it's 5339 or 5307 funds. They're allocated by formula. So Ulster County is entitled to draw from two areas. We are entitled to draw from the Poughkeepsie-Newburgh area. We draw funding from that. We're also entitled to draw funding from the Kingston area. Mm-hmm. And then finally, because we're part of the county is rural, we're entitled to draw rural funds, which are 5311 funds. And then finally, you have this whole host of funding that's available that's competitive. And UCAT has done a fairly decent job of moving to try to get competitive funds so that they can cover some of these shortfalls. But there are, you know, we know what these allocations are. We have them for federal fiscal year 2021 and federal fiscal year 2022, and the Transportation Council have to go through the necessary agreements, and some of those agreements take all three counties to agree on what the allocations of funds are. But there are substantial amount of dollars out there. It's just that Ulster County's entitlement to those dollars carry a formula. So we don't get, I mean, there's $39 million available in the region. You're going to get about maybe a million of it under the formula allocations. So that's, we're constantly fighting and working with Director Johnson we're constantly collaborating in terms of trying to make sure that we have funding available when we have these large capital needs.
And are we putting in for CFA at all? This is a federal. What about the consolidation funding? No. Okay. I'm sorry, Legislator Nolan.
No, I find this information very helpful, and I think it's I know from having gone to many Ulster County Transportation Council meetings that it's a complicated process putting together all of these funding streams into a package, and that the terrain is constantly shifting. And I've been amazed at the work of our planning department and of UCAT over the years to keep us where we are. It requires a lot, and really appreciate it.
And we'll be having a public hearing on the TIP tomorrow night in the legislative chamber, starting, I believe, at 6 o'clock or maybe 5:30. I'm not sure exactly the time. But you're certainly welcome to attend, and we can explain this process to you one more time.
It says it's at 6:30.
Thank you.
I always understand it during the time they're explaining it. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. That is it for the resolutions. Any old business? Any new business? Okay, we do have the transportation work group after Legislator Litz. Is that a hand to adjourn or?
No. It's time for. Mr. Masterson to grab his pen and pencil.
Okay.
We have a gentleman, Larry Furman, who is at 567 Crescent Avenue in Clintondale, New York. A couple of years ago, well, there's a cross culvert underneath Crescent Avenue, and he has a catch basin system with DIs in it. And a little, maybe a year or two ago, the county installed a pipe from his last DI out by the road to the cross culvert. But he believes it was placed too high, because since that time, and more recently, more often, the system backs up. It doesn't drain to the creek. It backs up and floods his whole area. So if you could send somebody down to look at that, that would be awesome.
Sure.
The second one is Pam Krimsky. That's 419 North Riverside Road. She lives on a blind curve, and she was hoping you'd go down and look at it and then install a sign, because she's tired of almost getting hit pulling in and out of her driveway.
Can do.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I don't know whatever happened with Mrs. Zanella down on Pancake Road. I never heard back. She had a slope issue when you repaved the road and regraded everything. She wound up on an oversteep and slope in front of her house that she used to mow herself, and now she can't. And there's... The crew said they were going to come by and take care of it, and that never happened. So she calls me every once in a while, and I gave her the telephone number. She said she called. I brought it up once or twice at this meeting. I don't know.
Herb, what's the name and number of that one? Sorry, let's.
It's Miss. That's all right. You can call me Herb. It's Mrs. Anella, and I can't remember her box number right now, but she's very close to the intersection across the street with, what's the name of that road that goes off of there? She's right next door to the guy that had the issue with the guide rail. You put the guide rail in by the catch basin?
Near Tina Drive?
Tina Drive. That's it. Thank you. It's pretty much across from that, just a little south on the opposite side of the road.
All right. We'll follow up on that. I wasn't aware of that one. No problem.
Yep. Thank you.
Legislator Nolan, did you have your hand up?
Well, I was going to mention a similar situation out in Shandaken, but it's actually the state highway, two state highways. So I can bring it up with Director Doyle separately and ask him to take it maybe to the Transportation Council. It's basically the new bridge at the intersection between Route 28 and Route 212. The bridge has poor sight lines come when you're turning left off of 212 and going east on 28. There are cars coming across the bridge very rapidly, and the cars can't see the oncoming traffic from 212, and 212 vehicles can't see the bridge vehicles. So some signage might help. One of the constituent who brought it to me asked if there could be a big mirror like we have when people have those kinds of situations at their driveway. I don't know. I mean, is the Transportation Council the right place to take that? Or who do you want me to send that to, Director Doyle? You and Brian Slack?
You can certainly send it to us, and we'll take it out. I think one of the things we want to do is actually take a look at the site distances versus speed limit to see if there's adequate site distance there.
When this was first brought to me, I wasn't sure that I understood the problem. But I actually was turning off of 212 to go east, and had a car come over the bridge very rapidly. I accelerated rapidly, and we dealt with it. But the problem they had identified, I experienced. So I think it's real.
The number is 331-5533.
For Mrs. Anello or for this problem?
No, for this problem. That's the Kingston residency.
Yeah.
For the New York State Department of Transportation. 331-5533.
Yeah. It's better in writing though. Just okay. So you know.
I'll send it to you. And you can forward it on to the appropriate officials if you would. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
I'll make a motion for adjournment.
So we will adjourn this and go into the work group. Is that how we should do this, Nettie?
Well, we could do this, the work groups as part of the meeting, I think.
Okay. Okay. So we will not accept the adjournment. You do not have to stay here, but we have several members of the public. We're going to open it up with Legislator Erner, and I've been discussing, transportation, and we're getting our thoughts together to see what we can do to, address all of the public concerns.
And Chair, you don't need a quorum to adjourn. So you're
okay.
Yeah, I apologize. You know, if it would help the members to adjourn and make it clear that this is a separate activity, that's fine with me. Apologize, legislator.
We'll have to ask for, for maybe a legal opinion on that. I don't know. I mean, I'm fine with adjourning it and doing it as a work group. The only question would be if we had multiple legislators, at what point? Because we were running into this with housing, but most of the legislators that were signing into the housing workshop were on the health committee. And then it if there were more than three of us, then we had a quorum and it presented some difficulties. So I don't think that'll be the case. Bye, Herb. Have a good night.
Well, I mean, I don't want to put you in legal jeopardy. So, I mean, I can leave if we're one legislator over.
But this is an appropriate topic of discussion for this committee. So I think it's fine for us to have it as part of the committee, as I originally said.
Yeah.
That's what the clerk had said. The clerk said that as well. She said that that's what the committee does, is discuss. If you're not taking action or doing anything other, if you're just talking and discussing, she said, keep the recording going and keep the meeting going.
Okay.
Doesn't matter if you leave or stay.
Maybe that's the best way to do it then. You know, it's, I don't think we're going to be formulating something to present and take a motion and voting on. So in that sense, it also is okay if we do not have the meeting open.
Yeah, at least not during the working group. And this will be very laid back. Everybody's, welcome to pipe in. But what we're looking at is creating policies and, especially given that we're getting close to our budget season. And then we can present it to our committee and the appropriate committees so that we can get the information or the policy passed. For instance, we keep talking about bus shelters. And even though that's essentially left up to the municipality, would we be able to allocate some ARPA money? And where do we need the bus shelters? And, and then how do we get advertising on them so people know when the bus schedule is? But that's a for instance. So should I open it up for discussion? We do have, did everyone see the organizational chart that Director Johnson forwarded? Okay. I will send that to the Kingston Riders as well. All right.
Would there be a way to post that somewhere that's public on the county website so that anybody in this meeting or anybody watching the recap of it could see that chart? Is Director Johnson, is that posted anywhere that you're aware of at this point?
Not to my knowledge. I know we do share that with FTA and my staff so they can understand our organizational makeup. And I'm too new, I can still claim that right now, to know if the county has a place for organizational charts on the website. It can be something that we could look in the future to update our own UCAT website with that information. I think if you go to the UCAT website right now, you will find no mention of my name there. So there's creative ways that we could do that so the public understands how we're kind of organized as a department.
Okay, and it did come in very handy. I'm going to forward it now. Just want to delete all the other schmutz that's with it.
And maybe you can do it with just the titles and not the employee names.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
And I would just caution, just keep in mind with, you know, as things organically grows and develops here with UCAT, there will be some edits to that. So I don't want to have, you know, documents floating out there that is not current and up to date. So that would be my caution about, you know, publicizing it just yet.
I had just pulled that up. Did that have a date on it? Because that's a good point.
No, the one that I sent you is the one I created last week. So in preparation for the budget. So that's brand new.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. Yeah, it does not have a date on it. Okay. No, it's very impressive. Thank you for, I guess our timing was right asking for it. So how are we going to open this up? I mean, we had discussions about intermodal transportation. Unfortunately, I had something come up and I could not make the trails committee meeting, but we do have Legislator Nolan here for that. We also have an opportunity to comment, and you heard Director Doyle mention that there will be a public hearing tomorrow on the Ulster County Transportation Council proposal. So for the members that are here, and remember, this is at a little bit of a different level because we're policies. You know, how would you like to move forward? Let's open this up for some conversation.
And might I suggest that everybody, we could begin by the everyone. Yeah, introduce yourself if you're here as part of and tell us and say why you're here, and that could include things like any organization you're part of, any experience you have with, and we're talking transportation here, so it doesn't necessarily have to be public transportation or even passenger transportation.
It could be wheels or bikes, or absolutely. I'm going to excuse myself for 1 minute. Well, should we start with? Do we want to start with Director Johnson? I mean, how is your screen? I would start with the top tile on the screen, Legislator Erner.
Yeah, I see Director Johnson first. Yep.
Okay.
All right. So, Lauren Johnson, Director of Ulster County Transit Authority, here to hear any suggestions and give feedback and insight to what UCAT is currently doing and what we have planned going forth in the future. And really interested in hearing if we are missing anything that we should be causing or directing our attention towards in the immediate future. So,
next I see Director Doyle with UCTC.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Dennis Doyle representing the Ulster County Transportation Council, and I would echo Director Johnson's comments. Very much interested in looking at and hearing any thoughts in terms of the transportation system and also with respect to UCAT itself. Thank you. Next on the screen, Chair Petit has stepped out, so I see Legislator Litz.
How you doing? Herb Litz, District 9, which encompasses at the moment Western Plattekill and Western Lloyd and Eastern Plattekill.
Thank you. And then I see Legislator Nolan.
Kathy Nolan, I represent District 22, which is the westernmost towns of Ulster County, Olive, Shandaken, Denning, and Hartenburg. And I've been involved in the county's transportation efforts going back over 20 years, primarily to obtain off-road safe alternatives to on-road transportation for pedestrians and cyclists, but also helping to establish the Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee and the county's current complete streets policy, and working with other groups around the areas on those kinds of issues.
Thank you. Next, I see Legislator Green. All right, I shouldn't say I should see Legislator Green, but yes. Hello, Legislator Green.
Hello. I can't tell if I'm on mute or not. I am just observing. I have something else I have to get done, but this way I can observe as well. Thank you.
Okay, and we did hear that. Thank you. Chair Petit has returned. Did you want to go now?
My name's Laura Petit. I represent the Esopus area. We've just recently got, some more public transportation here, and the trails all go around us. So I think that's where my interest comes from, where I'd like to see the connectivity. So we can get, bikes and tourism into the Esopus area and connect it with the other aspects of it. But then if somebody's too tired to ride a bike and wants to check out one of the really neat hotels or, then they could hop a bus. Also from some of the comments that I've gotten from our more rural people that, they're unable to get to work. So, so it's multiple, it's a cost of vehicles. It's for the workforce. And it's to keep people coming into our area who, may get dropped here without any sort of transportation.
Thank you. Next I see from the public, Clark Richter Sr.
You're still muted.
Sorry, we can't hear you, Clark.
Sorry about that. I got it now. So I've been really a user of UCAT transportation for, I would say, a little over 10 years. I mean, I remember when before UCAT, City Kingston merged, that was the whole thing. I remember waiting at a bus stop for an hour, thinking that the bus was going to show up and not realizing that the bus was taking an hour lunch break. So that whole experience and me being, trying to utilize it to just basically going out to the mall to spend money to go shopping or even to find better employment. Now I have good employment, I have a car, but I'm still, because of my past experience with UCAT, that I think that I wouldn't say it's worse, I mean bad, but it could be changed and really make it more easable for people like me. I could just leave my car home when the gas, I can't afford the gas, it's like, and jump on the UCAT to do my shopping, where I wouldn't have to be, the only thing, but on the weekends, you're very limited, and also taxis right now are limited, and because of gas prices, they're going up and up. So I foresee, the UCAT being a vital tool to the gas increase that you get. So I've been, and also just informational wise, since I've been involved with the Kingston News of public access, I would like to see that information go to the public access station to inform people, not only that or vice versa. And then I'm also on the digital committee, which handles information technology with Mrs. With the controller, March Gallagher. So that's a great thing too. So that's like my experience there. And my experience for 35 years of driving taxi, and I know the way that things are going. It just seems like we have more cars on the roads. Now we got more bikes on the roads. And I think we really should figure out how to make it where everybody could share the road without any kind of, I would say, disagreement out there or tragedy.
Thank you very much.
And I also serve on the Friends of the Friends of UCAT Rider Committee.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that group. And there are several others here who are part of that group if they so choose to say. But next we have Rachel.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Rachel Gans. I am a homeowner in Bloomington in Legislator Green's district, and for 20 years or over 20 years. I also serve as board secretary on the A.J. Williams Mars African Root Center in Pankakee, Kingston, and so have interest and got involved with, and I'm on the Public Transit Riders and Friends group, and I got involved with that group when we formed because of the merger with Kingston City Buses and UCAT, and actually the bus service had been disconnected or discontinued to Pankakee area, which directly impacted the community that I do work for there. So, and my concerns are accessibility, accessibility of public transportation to all areas of the county, and so that people can travel back and forth from work and school and do it safely. Thanks. I'll pass that back.
Thank you, Rachel. And next I see Alona R.
Hi, everybody. This is Ilona, and I've got a couple of, personal anecdotes, and then I'm just, observing mostly. But I suppose I should wait until later to tell my little anecdotes and to say the things that I would like. So I will do so. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ilona. Next, I see Cheryl Schneider.
Hi. Thank you so much. Good evening. My name is Cheryl Schneider. I'm a long-term resident of the county. I too live in the bustling metropolis of Bloomington on a county road. Boy, it would be amazing to see, I see all sorts of county vehicles go up and down along with gas and propane trucks and trash trucks and pool water filling trucks. Boy, I'd love to see four or five times a day public transit going up and down my county road. It goes all the way from one part of Kingston all the way down to Rosendale, for instance, and meets up with a state road. I'd like to see consistent bus shelters everywhere. I'd like people to have bus schedules that actually represent what's happening with the system. I would like the system to have updated schedules. I would like there to be affordable transit. I'd like to know that people can get not just to and from their jobs and to and from school, but they can get their kids to and from daycare. They can get their groceries. They can do their laundry. They can get to their doctor's appointments, and they can live their lives like full human beings. And until we provide housing and mobility and living wages, we're just kidding ourselves. That's how we're going to have community safety. And that's why transit is key to this. There's healthcare and a few other things in education. But these are the building blocks. This is the essential thing. If we're going to be a system and a government for all, or we're going to, it concerns me there's $20 million in buses that won't hit the road for maybe a year to 18 months. And I don't know that we have infrastructure for that, all that money. And I don't know if we have the right buses. And I don't know if we've taken a look at where we're supposed to be running them. And I have many concerns. So I'm here to be a, I've also owned a business for almost over 32 years. I see this as a very essential piece of the whole puzzle. Thank you for having this. And thank you for legislator and chairperson Petit for creating this subcommittee. And thank you for legislator Erner for chairing it.
Thank you, Cheryl. Next, I see Cynthia Nikitin.
Yes, hi there. Glad to be on this call with you all, and I'm here with my colleague in arms, Melissa Everett. And Melissa and I have been working on the Ulster Connect feasibility competition with VIA Transit and Ulster County. And this has been exploring microtransit as an option to improve mobility for Ulster County residents. And as part of this study, which is part of a New York Clean Transportation study, and there's a prize, $10 million, to be awarded to one particular, I think, community across in the state to actually implement this. We have been talking to riders, stakeholders, social service agencies, nonprofit organizations in Ellenville, New Paltz, and Kingston, and just trying to figure out if this idea of these on-demand, on-call electric shuttles would be something that people would use. It's for the first mile, last mile connectivity to connect you to a UCAT bus route, or if there is no bus at that time, to take you to your destination. So we have done focus groups with Ellenville Regional Hospital. We have done tabling at Office of the Aging events. We've been to the Center for Community Education. We've done tabling at People's Place, the Kingston Farmers Market. Family of Woodstock is one of our partners and colleagues. We've been working with the Kingston Land Trust. And there's the Everett Hodge Community Center is another place where we've been talking to people and doing surveys and having conversations about what people's mobility challenges are, and is this idea of a, you know, on-demand, on-call, almost to your door, door-to-door electric shuttle service, something that people would consider using as a complement to the existing bus system, not as a replacement for. So I'd like to pass it to my colleague, Melissa Everett. And it's nice to see Clark again, and Rachel, and Alona, and Cheryl, and thank you for being part of our focus groups.
Yes, and really what she said, and, you know, we have just been the community engagement arm. We've done about 260 surveys in English and Spanish. I think what's clear is that people understand how hard it is to run a transit authority in a rural community. People think that microtransit in general will help, and people want a really ongoing, robust channel of communication to understand how their inputs are being taken into account, to understand how the system is being designed. So VIA, who are the technology provider, the company that will run the microtransit, are just kind of absorbing all of the inputs that we've gotten and developing they've developed the proposal, and they're developing the pitch to NYSERDA for the Clean Transportation Prize that Ulster County is a finalist in for $10 million for, I think it's 3 years, to pilot a service. And one of the things I've come to understand is that it's not just pilot the same old thing, but it's learn and adapt and course correct and kind of test what it is that's needed for the microtransit to complement the transit system and really be useful. So we just got pulled into this meeting. I very much appreciate it. Unfortunately, I have an executive that I have to jump to, but hopefully Cynthia can be there for any further discussion. And, you know, we are, you know, just now in a position really to take all the feedback and the input that we've gotten and bring it back to the community and say, here's what we've learned. So that's the next phase.
Thank you, Melissa. And I now see in the top left corner of my screen, Ada with a hand up as well.
Hi, my name is Ann. I've been living in Kingston for about 20 so years. And I'm a member of the Friends of Kingston Riders. I remember when we first started, it was where's my bus? Remember that? We were like, where's my bus? But I am very grateful for this committee, and I look forward to working together and working towards having more equitable transportation in Ulster County. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. And would Clerk Tomshaw like to make an introduction? Otherwise, I will conclude the introductions. Okay.
All right. Lots of hands raised, though.
I'm good, though. Thank you, Phil. I appreciate it. I'm just okay. Here to keep you going.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Nettie. All right. And I'm Phil Erner, legislator for District 6, one-third of the city of Kingston. I'm new to the legislature, but I'm not new to transportation advocacy. I was part of the formation of the group that others have mentioned here in 2019, the Friends of Kingston Public Transit Riders. I share a car. I get around on a bicycle a lot, on the bus sometimes, walking. So my interest is, in terms of passenger transportation in our county, is to work toward equity and all the ways that that can look. There are basic considerations, as Cheryl mentioned, in terms of how you can live your life if you don't have your own car. There are environmental considerations in terms of environmental justice with pollution, where there's tailpipe emissions and also manufacture of the materials needed to run vehicles and so forth. And bigger, even beyond passenger transportation, there's other aspects, of course, that in terms of how we move goods around. So talking freight and commercial use of transit in our county. And I'm excited to see what kinds of policies we can create here with everybody's experience and expertise. So thanks all for being here. And now I see some hands, and I just wanted to propose as a way of proceeding. I don't know how long we want to spend meeting here this evening, but hopefully I'd like for us to come away from this meeting with a plan to meet again soon, and with some ideas of directions we might want to head as a working group, with the goal, as Chair Petit had said, of coming out with policies for the legislature to consider adopting. We have members of the executive team here so far, as well. So hearing their input as to how we would implement these would also be valuable. But I really hope that this will be driven by the public, actually, more so even than the government, because it's you whom we serve. So with that said, should we take some of the hands that went up? I think I saw Clark's first.
Thanks, Phil. I just wanted to add, in case you, it was your idea as far as driver training. So that would be a really great, because of the driver shortages. You can't have new buses without drivers. I would could you imagine like going to SUNY New Paltz and doing this whole bus driving experience to better yourself? That would be great. I would definitely would encourage you to keep pushing that, because I think that you're gonna come out with some good drivers. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Clark. We could take anybody who has a response to what Clark said. Otherwise, I'm ready to. Alona was the next hand that I saw.
Just to clarify, so we could, so if we were looking at retention and hiring, that would be operational. But if we're looking at driver training, that would be a policy. And of course, we'd want to come up with funding for it, since we have a budget cycle coming up. Correct. So we need to know how many people know. Okay. Okay. All right. Can I have that question answered, or should we move on to the next?
If I can provide some feedback here.
Thank you.
This is not your Uber operation. This is not your you know, cab driving operation. This is a commercial vehicle, which the FTA, FMSCA has provided standards and guidelines regarding training. And, you know, you can't, you know, just say, hey, I want to train someone and put them on the bus. There's new guidelines that have been drafted. It was actually proposed back in 2016, and it went into effect this year in February.
Okay.
It's the entry-level driver training program. And it's actually a two-part training program that is comprised of a theory, which is a classroom portion, followed by a behind-the-wheel portion of it. Not everybody could teach that. And you actually have to get authorization to be a training facility. Unfortunately, UCAT currently is not a trained facility anymore. So we cannot even take someone who doesn't have a CDL license to come on board and train them up to actually operate our vehicles. This was one of the first things that I recognized as a systemic issue within our operation. And we are currently actively working on becoming authorized training facility through those guidelines.
Oh, good to know. Okay. All right. So you could do the training. We wouldn't have to put funding aside to hire, you know, the CDL truck driving people.
Correct. And, okay. And I've been working with the Office of Employment and Training. Sharon Williams has been great to work with her and her team. And in the interim, as we do get people who are applying who don't have a current CDL license, we're working on bringing them still on board as a bus driver trainee, in which we are leveraging funds through the Department of Labor to pay for a training course with the local truck driving school.
Cool.
So we've identified things to kind of maneuver that. So, It kind of makes me cringe a little bit when I hear people say, let's create training and do this for that. There's a process
of doing it. Okay. Okay. So you've identified that already and you're working on it. So that wouldn't, I guess we wouldn't put that on our agenda. Legislator Green has her hand up if the other speakers wouldn't mind. Legislator Green, you're muted.
Sorry. And I appreciate your allowing me to go because I'm late for an 8 o'clock. But I want to mention something that's related, but a little bit different than, and I apologize for maybe interrupting the train of thought. But there is, when we submitted the Mid-Hudson Regional Sustainability Coalition Energy Working Group comments on the draft scoping plan for the Climate Act, one of the suggestions was that as cars with internal combustions get traded in for electric vehicles, they're just going to be sold secondhand to somebody else and still burn fossil fuel. And the thought is to incentivize businesses that can do retrofits to electric vehicles. And of course, I've said many times that we have to get the renewable energy infrastructure in place ahead of beneficial electrification, so-called beneficial electrification. Otherwise, we'll just put more demand on the grid and be burning fossil fuel in a different place instead of in the vehicle on the grid. So I just wanted to include those two comments since this is a transportation theme, and I apologize for having to leave, but I am interested and will try and keep posted. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
I believe Ilona was next.
What about Ada or?
And Ada following Ilona is how I saw it.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Hi,
As far as Mana Joe's point, I don't know how easy it is to retrofit a car for electric, but it's not that hard to retrofit a gas car to double or perhaps triple the mileage. That can be done, but you know, that's neither here nor there. Really, what I wanted to talk about was to bring to a human level the need for better transportation. I have a friend and she moved up here, I don't know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, and she doesn't drive. And she's put on more than 100 pounds since she's been up here, and she now weighs more than 300 pounds. And needless to say, this is horrible for her health. And if you look in her fridge, it's one medication after another. Her husband drives, and so sometimes he's a contractor. He's in construction. He's not a contractor, but he's in construction. So sometimes she gets a ride in and goes into New York City just so she can have some freedom of mobility. And, you know, that's really not a great situation to be in. And finally, after all these years, she decided to learn to drive. So tomorrow, what she will do is walk down to 209, take the bus into Hannaford's. I will come into Kingston via 28. I will pick her up at Hannaford's and I will take her to her driving lesson. And then I will, which is on 9W North and a little bit north. And then I will pick her up and bring her back. So, you know, it's gas for me. It's gas for, I mean, the whole setup is crazy. But if we can go to the health, to the issue of her health. I, you know, while you were meeting earlier, I took a look at the cost of an ambulance ride, and it's gone up to about $900. I'm sure that's an average number, and maybe, you know, let's say that 400 or 500 is covered by insurance, and then somebody has to make up. Let's say you have to make up another $500 on each ambulance ride. So, if there were 1,000 trips to the hospital that took place by microtransit instead of by ambulance, that would probably save the county, the state, somebody. I don't know how the costs are divvied up, but you know, we're talking $500,000, and that's only for 1 year, and possibly be more. 1,000 trips to the hospital by microtransit might be an underestimate. It might be a lot more than that. You might be looking at millions of dollars in savings just by having microtransit. So I'm always looking, I want to think about the costs that are not included in the calculations, the savings that will take place by having better microtransit. So there's no way I can use transit. I come from on 28. I come into town. I hang out on Broadway. I spend time at a little office on Broadway. And then my shuttle is to Mother Earth. My routine is Mother Earth, maybe Adams, and occasionally one of the hardware stores. So there's no microtransit for me. There's nothing that, so I have to have a car. And this is absurd. It's wrong. And it could be avoided with a better system and with a commitment to the health and welfare of the people instead of a penny pinching mentality. And you know, my favorite is tax breaks for millionaires. Well, I think what if we had some tax gifts for the people instead of welfare for millionaires? So that's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ilona. And, Anne, I see you said you forgot to put your hand down. That means you don't have anything to add at this time?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so the one question I would have to you, Director Johnson, is the hiring retention. You're already, you know, in the process of looking at driver training and handling it from there. Is there something as a legislature you would need with us as far as putting more money into funding? And then, of course, funding to Director Doyle for the infrastructure. So we have, you know, maybe chat about the financial end of it.
Yeah. One thing that is...
So sorry, Director Johnson, we're having trouble hearing you.
Yeah, I hear a lot of back. Yes. Can you guys hear me now? It stopped. Can you guys hear me? Okay.
Yes.
Good. So one area of concern is as we transition our fleet over into an electric fleet, one of the big failures of the county is, you know, we look at infrastructure, we look at the rolling stock as far as vehicles purchased, but we didn't really take a look into how does that impact the operation. And changing and converting the operation over into an electric operation is quite the undertaking to actually address the needs, the training needs, the different skill sets that's required to run a electric operation and have dollars set aside for either the promotion of new positions that is going to be needed to support this transition or training our current workforce in order to be able to support the onset of having all electric operation. That's something that I have raised concerns with the FTA, with the state, NYSDOT, asking and advocating for dollars or if there's dollars set aside in grants for workforce redevelopment and training. And unfortunately, there is nothing out there right now. And so what I have had to shift in doing is working with Sharon Williams, and she's been awesome with this, Office of Employment and Training, of capitalizing on some DOL funding that's there and available for potentially training dollars that we could utilize for that initiative. But unfortunately, it comes with stipulations that makes us kind of pigeonholed into the fact that we can't utilize all that funding, maybe only for one or two employees, because there is a threshold as far as how much a person could make before to be able to qualify to utilize that funding. I believe that threshold, if I remember correctly, off the top of my head, is $22 an hour. And so when we look at our mechanical team who makes more than $22 an hour, but they're diesel mechanics, how can I then utilize that funding there? I can't, to pay for them to get the skill sets needed to work on these electric vehicles and everything. So there are some hurdles there. I'm not sure which way the best way to kind of address it, but I can tell you guys that it is one of our strategic operational goals to create an ASE master certified garage. And with that is making sure that all of our mechanics hold that credential as a master mechanic, which is inclusive of a certificate regarding electrification and working on those components on vehicles. So in order, we're buying $1 million vehicles. We need to make sure that we have the workforce that could properly work on these vehicles as well as put those vehicles into the proper use and be efficient about it.
Thank you for that. I'd like to directly respond or comment. I had some discussions with some SUNY Ulster folks over the weekend about driver training as a possible program there. Could we see that as a pipeline for the kinds of new mechanics we need, or any for that matter, any sort of transportation jobs that the county might need to have, dispatchers, drivers, mechanics, anything like that?
So it's funny you say that. So I've been working with SUNY Ulster for the past 2 months. And a couple of things that is going to be starting here in the next couple of weeks is we're using SUNY Ulster as the training platform for our mechanical staff to go take those ASE master certification training courses that you could do it on your own at your own pace, and then partnering up with the testing. The nearest testing site is just across the bridge in Poughkeepsie. And so creating a package where we're paying for the mechanics to take that course, and it's about 8 courses that we've identified that we want them to take. And SUNY Ulster has already put those on their course offerings. And so now we're in the process of getting our mechanical staff up and running to utilize that. And so we're using this as a pilot program to see how that relationship works. They already have an existing working relationship with Sharon's team with OET. To kind of expound upon that, we're also utilizing, and I'm reviewing right now, their leadership training program that they've put in place for, I believe, Westchester Hospital. That really signifies of, you know, when we put people into supervisory positions, they not necessarily get training on how to be an effective supervisor and everything. And so they have some platforms there that I'm interested in looking at to provide that support to definitely the leadership team here. Because we're definitely about looking at improving the culture here at UCAT. Because that aids into our ability to retain staff and also recruit them.
Thank you. I see Cynthia's hand.
Yeah, hi. So if we're talking about policy and money and funding, which is three of my favorite things to talk about, when we've done our surveys and we've done our focus groups, there's an issue with getting information about the UCAT service. When I was on Lavoz, Maria Flores says, I can't read the PDF. I can't read the schedule. You know, Clark has been waiting for the bus in a snowstorm and had no idea that it was canceled. There are no more dispatchers on Sundays. So I don't know if it's upgrading the website, but the communication between UCAT and its riders, whether it's real-time information, schedules that are, you know, easy to read, but especially when service is terminated or late, you know, because the buses are often delayed for whatever reason, but riders have no way of knowing that that's happening. So, you know, many people, not the seniors and the elders that we interviewed, have smartphones and web savvy, and there's apps and things like that. But to say, you know, your bus is delayed 20 minutes, or the bus was canceled because of snow event, here's another way you can get home. And of course, weekend service is more limited, but people really, really were just devastated by the fact that there's no dispatcher you can actually, like, there's no one to call on Sundays, you know, to get any kind of a bus service. So beefing up the communication, you know, letting people know that UCAT is here and we're operational and, you know, this is when we're going to be there, and creating that trust and that sense of, you know, that there's someone in charge, and there's someone who is operating. Of course there is, but people kind of out there standing at the Hannafords with their ice cream melting don't really get that message, you know, that they're kind of out here on their own. So that would be something that could be in parallel as all these other initiatives are going, is how do you communicate to your people, to your riders, all the work you're doing, all the information they need to have to be able to get where they want to go safely and efficiently. Thank you.
So if we added that to the agenda, what we were looking at is communications. Would that be marketing under tourism? Would that be, no. What do you think, Director Doyle? What would your suggestions be? Because again, it's all boiling down to money. We happen to have some now. I don't know what it's going to look like in 2 years. So I think if we could address some of these.
Go ahead, Lauren. I don't want to answer for you, but I will say this, that we have, as a Transportation Council, repeatedly asked the UCAT to devote more funding towards its marketing and outreach efforts and its scheduling efforts. And I think we have been
semi-successful relative to that. The schedules are a bit easier to read, although they're not great. But the idea of essentially making sure that people know when the service is available, what service is available, how they can contact the service, and removing some of the other items that I think are more frustrating than anything else, I think is a really great way to start. They're easy wins, and they're something that I think we can do.
So just to piggyback off of that, a lot of things have changed since I've came on board. One of the things Cynthia brings up the notion of regarding about no one being in dispatch on Sundays. That has been fixed. So staff is actually present 7 days a week in UCAT operation. And so unfortunately, it just takes a little time to do that with CBA, working with CSE, and you know, making sure we go through the right appropriate process with that. But that is in effect. We still have some vacancies on our dispatch team that we need to fill out, but at least I know every day, 7 days a week, and even yesterday, I was in the office just to make sure that everything was going to snuff on a Sunday. I still had a dispatcher here for 7 hours on Sunday, even though we have only two routes running on that day. So those are little concerns, and that's a kudos to the Kingston Friends and Riders group that brought that notion up to me. And I believe that was our second meeting that we had. And I said, oh, well, that's an easy fix. I'll go and address that and did address it. I think as Director Doyle pointed out, marketing is severely underfunded here, and it's not being appropriately used. UCAT has an app, which many people probably don't even know about the app currently. And so with that, that's where you can get that real-time information. What we're all hoping for is, with the competitive grant with VIA, is adoption of an even better app that we could hopefully facilitate real-time, quicker communications with our riders and everything. I'll be the first to admit, if you could figure out how to get from point A to point B by looking at our website and looking at the schedules that's posted, I need to hire you on to help me understand it, because the times don't match up. You know, especially if you need to connect, you know, you're trying to get from one end of the county to the next end of the county, you need to match up or take a different bus. It doesn't match. And this is a very systemic, deep-rooted issue that we are currently actively working on. But again, I feel your frustrations, because I can only imagine how long it's been this way. And so we are addressing that. And right now, all we can do is market a broken system. And I would like to fix the system, fix the routes, and then offer up a real-time solution for folks to get that information from there.
With a dollar amount attached, because we'd be looking at that for the budget cycle. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
So the other thing that comes to mind, and we've had this discussion through our programs that deal with handicapped and elderly programs and others, is there, what people don't realize is there's a significant amount of transit on the road. Some of it public oriented, and some of it what I would call client oriented. Think Gateway, think ARC, et cetera. And the thought is to treat transit as a service, and look at how we can move those together. And one of the things that the Transportation Council continues to try to do is to look at mobility management as a means to do that, so that there's someone that essentially knows the services well enough that they can connect you to the necessary people to get you from point A to point B. It's never going to be easy, particularly if you're living in the rural areas, but at least we can see whether we can make the connection or we can't make the connection. I would also say that in defense of UCAT is that, you know, we have a responsibility with respect to our, with respect to the fixed route system that we have, which runs all the major corridors in the county. The UCAT folks with with the support of the legislature and the Transportation Council, expanded that reach for paratransit to 3/4 of a mile off of the fixed route. So we have a service responsibility for paratransit that are 3/4 of a mile off the existing system, which is more than the federal government essentially requires. And we expanded that. And you heard Lauren today talk about the additional funding for support vehicles which this committee just went through. Part of those support vehicles allows us to essentially deliver that paratransit service.
Thank you. We have Clark Richter, and then if you wouldn't mind, Phil, I'd love to hear from Kathy Nolan about trails. I don't want to forget that's part of our transportation system. I do know folks that actually bike back and forth, and there's always been some concern that part of our trail system is on Route 32. I wouldn't ride on Route 32 with a bike. Clark, did you want to speak, or did you want
to? I just wanted to respond to his answer to me as far as the director of UCAT. I wasn't actually speaking as UCAT offering classes for driving a bus. I was actually going on Phil's idea where we're going to reach out to the county, SUNY, or even other training centers to offer that, where you're taking some fundings from the tip of the federal or the state. Because can we confirm that is there still a driver shortage for UCAT? And do we know when we're gonna have like normal schedule? Because the schedule has been like the time says it used to be every hour, now the times are like way cut down. And I have to respond to the whole scheduling things. I think it was a mess with the city bus. But it was easier with the city bus to transfer to UCAT than when they took over UCAT, and then they changed the schedules completely a 360, and now it takes you have to go on 3 different buses to get to shopping, and then with the mall coming back, it's like there's no way you can make it back with ice cream coming from mall. I mean, there's no way. Even like frozen stuff. So that's like the different thing. And I wanted to state with Mr. Devin Doyle, there is for the longest time since I remember with Sasha when she took over, there are new electronic devices in each bus that's saying that this bus is arriving at this stop, and they're not even working. I'm not even sure how much the county paid on them devices. They're if you could just have something like that at Hannaford saying. Or sort of like an airplane schedule saying like the bus is going to arrive in Hannaford's this time, like, or the bus is going to be canceled. You know, all buses are canceled today. You know, stay home, and that would be informational right there, and then you could share it on your Facebook, because if you don't have Facebook, you're not going to know the buses are canceled. They did try to put a tablet down in the plaza, bolted a tablet in a plaza, UCAT did, and it was just gone the very, couple weeks. But I think if you had a better system as far as like a screen or something that really couldn't be damaged, or maybe you could talk to Hannaford's and have that inside, because I remember having the taxi phone connect to it right straight to the taxi company, which was a long time ago. If they could have a screen inside Hannaford's where it could be security monitored, and you could see when the buses are coming or not even gonna show up. But mostly, it's great to have that ability to, if you don't have a car, to just be able to go from A to B. Because the distance of, like, when you're living downtown, especially in Bukkake, I could imagine the people down there, when they had no bus service, to try to get up to Hannaford's and then go, because the distance is apart, And I'm not even sure how you would even go shopping if you didn't have transportation outside the counties for an Aiken and the rest of the towns. So it's like there's no accessibility to that. And I think I would love to see that get better. But I would just like to, for myself, it's like focus on the city of Kingston and how to get that where it's not so much of a, you know, oh, I got to take the bus today, but and encouraging people to park their cars, and that return will take less cars off the road and make transportation a lot better. And I appreciate that. I'm sorry for going on.
Kathy, Legislator Nolan, did you have a direct response to Clark or anything?
Yeah, I actually agree with that idea and was going to suggest something similar. I think that an emergency notification system that could be at some of the prominent points that would function sort of like a emergency communications network, so that at major points where riders get on, there's some kind of notice board, maybe a freestanding board that could be lit up when there's major changes, and then ask the public to help spread the word is a good idea, and I think could be really important to build in pretty quickly, because it's one of the biggest complaints, and it makes sense that it is. It can leave people expecting a service that they don't get, and they can make sometimes make alternative plans if they know. My sister was a longtime UCAT rider, and this was one of the greatest sources of frustration for her. And I think we still have probably in Shandaken, not too long ago, it was about 50% of people didn't use computers. It's probably a smaller percentage who don't use smartphones, but there's still some. And so having some notice boards and maybe getting the word to the town clerks around the county, because a lot of people will call the town clerk if they have a problem. So maybe having a little focus group on potential emergency notification systems. I'm saying emergency. It's not necessarily emergency weather conditions, although it often is, but it's urgent notifications for public that are relying on the service.
Thank you. I see Director Johnson's hand.
Yeah, those are good, valid points. And it's funny, if you guys probably look at my notes over the last 3 months, 4 months that I've been here, these are things that we already have a plan in place through capital expenditures that we're looking to kind of address. You know, we did have a announcement system that was in all of UCAT buses, but unfortunately that was installed a little over a year ago, but it never really worked properly. And so we are in the process of getting that removed from our vehicles and then going out for procurement for a new system. When we talk about technology and we talk about marketing, there's many different platforms of how people access their information. And lo and behold, you know, we have to design a communication plan that is encompassing of multiple formats, you know, from the old school, you know, paper schedules to the new technology where we have QR codes already. I think I saw someone in the comments mention QR codes. We already have that on some of our bus stops. But then you run into the problem, where does our bus actually stop at? So there's a lot of things that are interconnected, but actually impact, you know, our ability to successfully, effectively communicate with our riderships and our public. Even our website needs to be updated. And I was just told that it was just recently updated. So I feel it's outdated. We want to make sure that, one, people understand where to get the information from. And, you know, Sheriff Petit, if anything, marketing needs to be allocated to successfully inform the public about UCAT, you know, and it's going to take some money to do so, to frame a message, put the message out there, and, you know, it will be a good time to set aside those funds for that in hopes that we do and we are successful with that via campaign to actually merge all this into a very robust campaign about UCAT services and really just get the notion and the idea out there.
So, Legislator Erner and Chair Petit, we're over 2.5 hours from when we started our meeting, and that's tough on a Zoom platform. Mm-hmm. There's some good comments in the chat about using software to broadcast to multiple platforms and adding in auto dialing to a list of people who could give you their phone numbers, I guess, and then get the auto dialing by telephone instead of social media or text. I think those are good. I'm happy to address some specific things on trails or maybe frame an agenda for presenting at the next meeting or get together between meetings. We having some people dropping off. So I think it would be good if we can wrap up soon, as long as we don't leave anybody feeling like they didn't get their point addressed or didn't have the opportunity to bring something forward.
That sounds right to me. So I have a sort of closing thought as we approach what seems like a point to end. But before we leave, I certainly want to be sure that we have people give us a way to get in touch with you. I think everybody who showed up here, we have an email, we have a recording. So I'll work with Clerk Tom Shaw to be sure to have the full record of attendance. I have notes that I've taken that I can send around. And do we want to survey here? Is there a general sense of how soon we want to have another meeting? Should we send out an email, see what people's availability is and do it that way?
And if we have a good mix of legislators, I mean, I don't know if we'd be violating. And I'm still about keeping the meetings open. I think a lot of the concern about getting a quorum is having a meeting that wasn't publicly noticed. But, you know, as long as it's open and we put the information out there, did you want to continue to do it after our public works meeting? Because that does tend to go late. And honestly, since we do have the budget season coming up, I think it would be a good idea to have a couple more meetings because I'm starting to put dollar signs on some of the recommendations, and then it'll take us some time to figure out what the cost is going to be. You know, and even if we address the bikes and trikes, which has come up multiple times in conversations about using trails as public transportation routes and, you know, that's going to be a cost as well.
I do believe that the city of Kingston has, through one of its mechanisms, a look at bike share, we could ask somebody from the city of Kingston to bring us an update and report on that. John Grossbolin might be a good contact for that.
What is his last name?
Grossbolin.
Thank you.
Okay. Use contact info.
Perfect. Okay. Okay. I think this was good. Yeah.
And in terms of meeting at the public works meetings, I think that's a good date for at least some of the meetings because we have a lot of the transportation planning officials and DPW officials at those meetings. But if we could plan for those to be a little shorter so that it's a little less than 2.5 hours or that we could at least finish by 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it's hard. You never know how many resolutions you're going to get. I mean, I don't think because it's a lot of this is ARPA. I'm being, you know, just it's almost a guarantee that at some point we'll have about half the resolutions. But bye. So Yeah, so hopefully they'll get a little shorter. That's just, you know, we can talk to Nettie about it. Nettie, stop putting solutions on the agenda.
So I just need the two of you to give me a motion to adjourn, Laura and Cassie.
May I just make a closing remark?
Sure.
Thank you. And Legislator Nolan, I really do look forward to a discussion on trails next time. Tonight's discussion mostly focused on passenger mass transit, which is great, something that I certainly want to be talking about. I want us to imagine what it might be like to really have equitable transit. It seems to me that right now in Ulster County, we have committed to having certain infrastructure that we pay together as the community. We, for example, have roads and bridges, and we build them, we maintain them, we snowplow them, we repair them, and so forth. But actually getting around on those roads and bridges falls to the individual. What would it look like for us to commit as a county to more of a shared responsibility for getting each other around on those roads and bridges? That's kind of what I'm putting out here for us to imagine. That might be more of a cultural change than something the government can do, but that's part of my vision toward equity. And I've said it in public before, when we're allocating a lot of funds to do these repairs, which of course are necessary if we're to be able to get around at all. But again, seeing it as who has the rights in transit right now. And if you have a private car or even a shared car, you have a lot more of them than if you don't at this point, it seems to me. So thank you.
Okay, were we still supposed to make a motion?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
I'll make that motion that we adjourn.
I'll second.
Very good.
Call the vote.
All in favor?
All in favor. Aye. What happens if we don't? Do we have to stay?
I don't know. You're the host. There, yeah. Laura. You have control.
Okay, very good. And if anybody has any ideas, Nettie, all of our emails are co.ulster.ny.us. Nettie, it's her first name and last three of her last name. Or,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. You see it right there. And, you know, maybe shoot us some agenda items. Because, again, we're trying to look at this as a broader overview of the transportation system and how do we get it all connected, you know, not necessarily operational, because if it's something like the riders group had brought up to Director Johnson a couple of months ago, and he already has taken care of that Sunday dispatcher, I believe, starts July 15th. So that's kind of the simpler stuff, but that wouldn't have to go through our group, if that makes sense. Okay. Kathy Nolan. Okay. Oh, thank you.
That was intended to go to everyone, so I'm now giving it to everybody as
well.
Yeah,
I should probably open this back up because there is a way. I'll save the chat. And okay, I just saved it. So when we send it out now, everybody will have it. Okay.
Good.
Okay.
Can I just make a comment about the way this meeting has went? I've been around for a little bit, and this is really a great meeting as far as inviting the public. I know you guys are here several hours, and you're probably doing that almost every single day. So I gotta say, it's like, thank you for just talking about it, because I don't think that it's always been where take the money, put the buses out there, do the schedule, and nobody really, you know, what's what, how can we make this better? And you guys are doing it. And, thank you.
Thank you.
Why we signed up for these jobs, I think. So, really, really glad to have the participation and have a forum that works for people. Thank you, Legislator Erner, for organizing that.
You're welcome. So we'll talk to everyone soon.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you. Have a good night.
You too.
Night.